The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
What we're going to talk about today is what we call a generosity culture, which is an intentional process to develop generous disciples who continually fund the vision. Now, we're going to talk about it in discipleship terms. I'm going to give you a lot of data. So a couple of things you need to know. When we do work with churches and install this, first and foremost, it's evergreen because it's discipleship. We're actually embedding this into your discipleship mechanism, and I'll talk to you about rhythm here momentarily. So it's evergreen, meaning that it's not a one and done or a silver bullet. It has to be culture to be evergreen, however. So if you just do it as an install or a preaching series, you're going to get a bump, and it's going to come right back. It's kind of like a rubber band. Boom. As soon as you let it go, it's going to come back. The other thing that we see, and this is one of those that should make you go, what? Churches that install this as culture will see anywhere between a 10 and 30% bump. So look at your budget today and just know, hey, if we do due diligence and if we learn the competencies of making this our true culture, we'll see an increase of anywhere between 10 and 30% in our general giving. Is that significant? Yeah, it's pretty significant. So that's what we're going to talk about today. First thing I want you to do is I want you to rank your current generosity at your church. Rank it from 1 to 10, as best you can tell. 1 to 10 and 10 is high. I just want you to take a second. I want you to rank your generosity. And I want you to give me some popcorn answers. What would you rate yours?
I'd say we're about a
6. 6? Six, okay. Somebody else, give me, what did you rate yours?
Seven.
Seven, awesome. Six?
Yep.
Five?
Six.
Six? Five?
Five.
Five, awesome. Now, I want to talk to you about trends. I want you to think for a second. When you think about generosity in your church, what trends are you currently watching? What are you watching that makes you go, good trend or bad trend? I'd like to hear from you just really quickly, some popcorns. What trends are you watching? Talk to me.
Personal consistency. If you're looking at a person, how consistently are they giving?
Excellent. So personal consistency. Yep. Someone else.
How long does it take new people to engage?
Very good.
Buying into the...
To start being generous, to start giving. Excellent.
Just for main big items that are coming up, we've got a building project that we're getting ready to do, and we had somebody make a large contribution, and then someone else made a large contribution.
Nice.
So it's just kind of, we're seeing big chunks come in.
Yeah.
But we would like to see more of a...
More consistently throughout. Yeah. That's good, though.
Yeah.
It's very, yeah. Everybody else is like, oh, poor guy, man.
That's a shame. It's been a long time coming. So.
That's good. That's good. Good. Anybody else want to share a trend that you're watching?
We've been seeing more generous in financial giving, but less generous with personal time.
Okay. So money, but not time.
Exactly.
Gotcha. That's good. Good observation. Which trends to you, as we're talking or as you're sitting here, which trends are most concerning? Is there a trend you're watching that you go, that's a concerning trend? Anything in your...
You just said, I mean, because that's the issue. I mean, like, we struggle. We're almost at a 2,000-people church, and I'm begging every week for people to help.
So you're seeing the whole generosity around time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Remind me again, your position is?
Preschool.
Preschool, and yours was?
Children.
That's what I thought. Okay.
I see
a trend. Yeah.
The demographics of the church.
You get it. Say it again.
The demographics of the church.
Demographics of the church. Yeah.
If you have a congregation that's aging.
That's right.
On fixed incomes, the line of business is old money doesn't spend.
That's right. That's right. Well, let me share something with you. So a couple of years ago, recently, we surveyed 500 of the largest churches in the country. We did that through Lifeway Research. And we asked them about the biggest financial obstacles that they were facing. Now, these are big, big churches, but you're going to see, as I share what they're worried about, is the same thing you're worried about. And that's my whole point here. So here were their top three responses. An aging donor base, church debt, and lack of a generosity strategy. Sound familiar? Aging donor base, church debt, lack of a generosity strategy. So a couple of weeks ago, I was with all the mega metro guys, all the lead pastors at the largest Southern Baptist churches. We were all together, and I shared that with them, and they were hilarious. These are guys you would all know, and they were taking pictures. Like, it's not just us. They were so relieved it wasn't just them, right? So they, you know what happens? We get isolated. We think, it's just us. I don't know. We don't know if we can get out of this hole. So you see that, you see yourself and your church through that grid. So I want you to think for a second of the most generous church that you know. So I want you to actually get a church in your mind that you would consider to be generous. And I want you to give me some attributes or characteristics of that church. Most generous church that you know. Give me some just quick, tell me about them. What are some attributes of those churches?
Kind.
Outward focused. Mission minded.
They have the people who can give generously.
They have people who can give generously. Anything else you want to add to that? Now I want you to just hold that placeholder because we're going to talk about to cultivate a generosity culture, it's not transactional. So I want you to start just locking away. This is a church that you would want to lead. Here's some things that I've picked up. They have impact in the community. They all have clear vision. They know where they're going. They have low debt. So very generous churches generally have low debt. They tend to be unified, right? And I think that goes hand in hand with clarity. They've clarified where they're going and they have unity and rally around it. They give to the community. So I have impact in the community and give. So impact is there, that outward focus they're going. They give is actually financial. Like they tithe back to the community. They do things financially for the community. They tend to be full of leaders. So generous churches tend to be full of leaders. They tend to be joy-filled. They're very joy-filled people. They're prayerful. These are just some quick, kind of like what you did, just some quick popcorn answers to the attributes of generous church. Now, here's what I want you to see. None of you mentioned, and I'm telling you, that generous churches don't necessarily have to be wealthy churches. Okay? A generous church could be your church. Doesn't have to be a rich church. Doesn't have to be filled with rich people. Right? So I want you just to hold that thought in your mind. Let's move on. So I'm going to talk about clear vision and why this matters. So there are four reasons that people come to your church. So when Joe comes in off the street to your church, there are four things, one of four things that attracts him. First is the place. Place, the physical location, the building structure, you know, general location to his home, place. Next is personality. People come to your church because generally of the teaching pastor, the personality, teaching pastor. Next is a program, a programmatic offering, a ministry offering. Most churches have one or more, maybe two, three maybe, programmatic offerings that are kind of elevated above the rest. And finally, people. Just a lot of warmth that they were invited there by a person. We call this at Exano lower room identity. It's God's provision for your church. You want it to be good. However, that box of place, personality, program, and people, that box is very volatile. And it changes quickly and without warning. So I want you to think about you build a new building and you're going to build a new worship space. Well, when you move out of the old worship space, hey, that's where I was baptized. That's where I got married. That's where my kids gave their heart to the Lord, right? That's where God met me at the altar. You see what I'm talking about? Personality. You ever been a part of a church that had a beloved pastor leave? Wasn't it awesome for the church? I mean, the church was like, yeah, it's terrible. One of our client churches is Bellevue over in Memphis. Who was the last pastor at Bellevue?
Adrian
Rogers. This is hard to wrap your mind around, but I want you to think with me for a second. Three pastors over 100 years. Three pastors over 100 years. Steve Gaines shows up on the scene. I don't know if you know Steve or not. Steve's awesome, but he's not Adrian, right? And a group of godly people formed the 501c3 SaveOurBellevue.org to run him out of town. Isn't that terrible? But personality matters. Programs. When I cut my teeth in ministry, I did it in worship. So I started in worship. And I had to, let's just diplomatically say, rework a choir. Right? What I want you to see is this is very volatile. And people identify in that lower room. And what happens is we live in that lower room. And so what we keep saying is, hey, if we're going to reach more people, we just got to get a better place or a better personality or better programs or more programs. And then in people, high people quotient churches, you never lose a family. You lose 10 families because there's zero connection to anything worthwhile other than I'm in relationship with you, right? So if the church's not good enough for you, well, it's not good enough for me and my wife. You see what I'm talking about? So we've got to, first and foremost, we've got to get to an upper room of unique calling and vision. We've got to be able to name what it is we're doing. We call that upper room identity, and it's God's vision for our church. We get there on the staircase of common language. Common language. Now, you're going to see, I'm going to give you a couple of examples, but if we don't get here, this is volatile, and we will constantly have this going on financially in our churches. I like what's going on. I don't like what's going on. Right? Love my pastor. Pastor leaves. Right? We're doing VBS. We're not doing VBS. You're with me. Now, the proverb says, where there's no vision, people perish. When I work with churches, this is boots on the ground. This is how I see it. Where there is no vision, people cherish. So I can have a 5-minute conversation and tell you if you have vision in your church. Because I'll immediately start hearing, we used to. Boy, there was a, man, when we did the Living Christmas Tree, right? You remember when we used, you're with me, you're feeling me. So where there is no vision, people cherish. What I'm telling you is, if there's nothing healthy to look forward to, your people will automatically look backwards. Did Moses have that trouble? Yeah. He tried to vision cast, hey, we're going to the promised land, and all people want to do is go back in captivity. Captivity is because what looked better to them was behind instead of in front. So here's a couple of quick examples. These are all in that God Dreams book. Here's Clear Creek Community Church in Houston, Texas. They're very generous. Here's an idea. So they hope to establish 10 campuses of Clear Creek Community Church in the 4B area. This is in Houston. So the 4B area is Beltway to the Beach, Bay to Brazoria County. So they created a box geographically. And in that little box, there are 500,000 people. 55% of them consider themselves nones, N-O-N-E-S. Go to the hospital, what religion or denomination? None. What they're saying is, we're going to spend all of our energy, all of our resource, and call all of our people to reach those 500,000 people in that box. Okay, that's a vivid picture of what they're trying to accomplish. Here's another one. Harvest Church, Billings, Montana. This is the wild, wild west. In the day, there was a smattering of little churches out there that were life-giving in all these little communities. That day is over. So Harvest Church is stepping in, and they're saying, in the next 10 years, Harvest will establish, renew, and strengthen the tangible value of the local church in communities within a 500-mile radius of Billings, Montana. Do you know what they're spending their money on? They're revitalizing, developing leaders and revitalizing churches. They have 26 campuses right now, and it's a 500-mile radius. But it's Wild West, right? So it's like 12 communities. But I want you to see, the reason I want you to see that, I want you to start framing up, how vivid is our vision in our church? Is it generic or is it clear? People are going to give to clear. You need to know where you're going. So here's your clarity question. Does your vision at your church create unity, action, and measurements? You don't have to answer that. I just want you to process that. Is your vision consistently articulated and acted upon? Basically, are we spinning our wheels, or do we know where our wheels are taking us? How helpful is your vision to your annual ministry budget, to your ministry programming priorities, your staff development, and your generosity discipleship? That's just for you. I just want you to process. People give to clear vision that is successful. It's the first step to having a generous church. So we're not going to get forward until we clarify some things. So I just want you to know that, okay? Again, if you'll give me your email, pardon me, I'll send you all of this information. Now let me tell you how we got here, because this is important. In the 1960s, until the 1960s, the church was resourced by tithes and offerings. It was not another mechanism or outlet. In the 1960s, three guys left the Southern Baptist Convention, and they started a company called RSI. And they took a marketplace idea from the YMCA about how to raise capital, and the modern, as we know it today, capital campaign ministry was born, the 1960s. So at that point, we had tithes and offerings, and we had capital campaigns, and we rode that throughout the whole 1960s and 1970s. Nothing changed. Nothing changed. In fact, that playbook is almost identical today as it was back then. Nothing new. Now, culture has shifted dramatically, but the playbook is the same. Just hint, 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 hint. Okay? Now, in the 1980s, we had some craziness happen in Christendom. How many of you remember PTL? PTL, Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. What was happening with them? Some of you guys are like, I don't know who that is. I don't know who that is. Jim and Tammy Faye Baker had a little TV show, right? And they were raising a lot of funds and crying a lot. And they were going to build a Funland resort type thing, and it went a little haywire, right? How many of you remember Oral Roberts University? And Oral Roberts went up in the tower, and he's up in the tower, and he's saying what? Yeah, you got to give... What was the total? Was it 8 million? 17 million. A crazy amount of money in the 80s. You know, if you don't give X amount of dollars, millions of dollars, God's going to kill me. Yeah, it's all over the news, man. Oral Roberts is in the tower. So we got Jim and Tammy Faye. We got Oral Roberts. We got Jimmy Swaggart. Remember Jimmy Swaggart? We got Jimmy Swaggart, man. My dad used to watch Jimmy Swaggart before we go to church. John Starnes would sing. Jimmy Swaggart would preach. And then we'd go to church, right? Well, Jimmy Swaggart got stuck in a hotel room with a prostitute. Right? So we got three big things. How many of you remember, this is just for fun, Robert Tilton? Remember Robert Tilton? If you don't know Robert Tilton, it's worth a Google.
Yeah, you
do. Okay, so what I want to point out to you is something is happening in the 80s that is shaking the core of who we are as a church. Now, the church is now kind of back on our heels. So when we talk about money, this is what they're associating. The culture is associating this, and they're going, hey, all you Christian people are whack. There are two big churches coming out of the ground at that point. It's Willow Creek and Bill Hybels, and Saddleback and Rick Warren. And in reaction to what's happening in culture and in Christendom, they coined a phrase at the offering time. Do you know what that phrase is? Hey, we're about to take our offering, and if you're a guest, this offering is not for you. Very benign. It's in reaction to this. What they're saying is, hey, you guys are seeking the Lord. You're here at church. If you're a guest, it's not for you. However, having now time to study, what we've done is we have branded from day one. What if I told you, what if you came in as a guest and I said, hey, listen, if you're a guest, you don't need to serve. You don't need to serve. I brand you from day one, serve is not important. Right? I brand you immediately. So now what we've got is we've got this movement, totally benign in the way it's being approached, but it's having a profound effect on our giving. So we've got a wacky church culture. We've got churches that are back on their heels saying, hey, if you're a guest, this is not for you. I want you to see this 50%. In the 1980s of all charitable giving, church giving was 50% of that pie. Of all charitable giving in the country, 50% of it went to the local church. Just hold that thought. So we got craziness going on. So what we do as churches is we stop talking about money. It's dirty, right? Makes people feel awkward. Why? Because they're associating with craziness. So we go into the dark ages. We stop talking and teaching. And Dave Ramsey becomes the voice of church of money in the church. Now, I live in Franklin. Dave lives up on a hill. I live down in the valley, all right? He's got financial peace is a phenomenal tool. There's a piece of it that's important to understand. It is a stewardship tool. It is not a generosity tool. Those are two different things. Have you ever gone through financial peace? What has to happen before you can really start being generous? You got to be out of debt. You with me? You got to be out of debt. So until your financial house is in order, you can't give. Right? Now, I'm telling you, this is kind of a funny thing. We've got a strategic partner that just did a research partnership with them. They were trying to prove, Ramsey was trying to prove what I just articulated to be false. And so they just did a big survey that was a catastrophic failure because it was more pronounced than what I'm telling you. So big FPU churches found their generosity going crashing. Their individuals were in good shape, but the church was in trouble. And there was a permeating, we must be out of debt flowing through these churches in the culture. All right? So just isn't this crazy? So just lock this away. So this is what happens 80s and 90s. 2000... We have 9/11. We have Katrina. We have the recession. So we have these big financial drainers, right? We have a natural catastrophe. We have a national crisis. And then we have the recession happening. At the same time, culture is picking up the mantle of generosity. So we have extreme home makeover. We have Idol Gives Back, The Big Give, and a list goes on and on and on. Now, how many of you ever watched Extreme Home Makeover? You ever watch that? At the end of this house, when they get done with the house, there's Ty Pennington and the people that are going to get the house are standing behind a what? A bus. And Ty yells what? Bus driver, move that bus. And the bus moves, and tell me what the face looks like. Okay. So what's happening is, so I hear this all the time, millennials don't give. Oh, they give. In fact, they're the most generous population that we've had in probably the last four generations. But they don't give to anything that doesn't show that face. Because we branded it. Right? So when they give, here's a quick story that'll make the point. When I moved to Nashville, my first small group, I had the head of the Nashville Humane Society. The dog shelter. We're talking over dinner one night, and I asked her, I said, because she was mentioning how much income they were getting, nonprofit, right? And they were, I mean, it was like, people are giving you that much money? How? She goes, because my story's pretty straightforward. When you give to the Nashville Humane Society, we rescue, heal, and adopt. That's all we do. We rescue, we heal, and adopt. So let me ask you, leaders, when you give to the Nashville Humane Society, what does it go to? It goes to? Rescue, heal, and adopt. When I give to your church, what does it give to or go to? It goes into a black hole. And so what's happened is we've lost the culture, and we've not picked up the ability to tell our story, return on investment. And millennials are looking for, and we don't have any clue how to tell them. So FPU and Crown Financial are still our, that's our mechanism. See that 30%? See that 50%? That's in the 2000s. 2 weeks ago, I got an updated Barna research on that pie. It's 23% right now. Church giving is 23% of all charitable giving in the country. All right? So I'm letting you see how we got there. Isn't that funny how benign that is? The other thing I want you to see, how many of you cut your teeth in ministry in the 80s and 90s? Yeah. We've got a whole generation and population of church leaders who never heard money talked about in a healthy way. Because it was dark ages. Right? So we got the churches right now just going, we don't even know how to talk about it. So we guilt people and we create causes and so on and so forth. So that's how we got here. Now let's keep on. So with a pop culture leading the way on generosity, several problems are amplified. Number one, the church is stuck in the past and it's slow to adapt. We are generally about 10 years behind what culture is doing, right? So we're always playing catch up. The other thing is pastors lack confidence on financial topics and generosity, while those that have confidence in money conversations can be a bit too confident, right? Well, I think, was it one of the Carolinas? Who did we have a pastor just buy his wife a Lamborghini?
Georgia.
Was it Georgia? It may have been Georgia, South Carolina. Yeah, I bought our Lamborghini. Come on now, let's go. That's a little too confident. We find ourselves, because we're in the rears and we're catching up, we find ourselves chasing money instead of chasing discipleship. So what we've got to do is we've got to recalibrate our paradigm so that we're actually trying to develop people, not just chase their money. So this is a posture of, we really do want something for you, not from you. So I want you to lock that away. Your generosity culture is going to be successful when you are truly postured and I want something for you, not from you. So with that in mind, I want you to think about the most generous people you know. Give me some attributes of those people. Generous people, give me some attributes.
They think of others before themselves.
They want to know what the need is.
They want to give to a need. Great. Yep.
They want to be a blessing.
They want to be a blessing. That's right. They want to be a blessing. So again, I'm going to give you some of these. So they tend to be joyful. Probably if you know someone who's generous, they're typically joyful. They're positive. They're really on board. They're sensitive to the Holy Spirit's whisper. They tend to be very thankful for what they have. They're good managers, so they walk that fine line of stewardship and generosity. They walk that well. They're good managers. They tend to be very prayerful. They serve well. Any of these resonating with you? They're flexible. They're very alert when it comes to sensitivity of what the needs are. They're very alert. They're always prepared, right? Generous people tend to always be prepared. They've created margin. They're just always ready to go. They're altruistic all over. Wherever they go, they're generous. Now, we didn't say anything about them being rich. Now, I want to pause for a second. I want you to look at that list. How would you like to lead a church full of those people? That'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it? So what I want you to see is we're gonna give you some tools about how to create a generosity culture. But really what we're doing is we are wanting these things for our people. And what I can tell you from my experience has been is finances are the last stronghold threshold of your people becoming those people. They will trust God in every other aspect of their life. They will thank God for his provision of the job, but they still in their psyche believe that the money is what provides for them. And what we want to do is disciple what God is calling out in them so they can now posture to become that type of person. Fair? So I want you to think for a second. We're going to do a little generosity exercise here. This staircase is going to go from a first-time guest. Joe is coming to your church for the first time ever. Let's say 3 years, he's going to become a generous disciple. Popcorn to me, what does Joe need to experience for him to become a generous disciple? Tell me what he needs to experience in your church to become a generous disciple in 3 years. What needs to happen?
Connection.
He needs to be connected. What else?
Action.
What else?
Love.
Love. He needs to be loved. What else?
Accountability,
membership. Yep. What else?
Involved.
Yep. I'm going to populate this, and I'll send this to you I'll send this to you in a PDF. But I'll send you this little test. Here's what I want you to see. Maybe we need to teach on personal finances. What is personal finances? Because listen, in that dark ages, we stopped telling our kids too, and so we don't know right now. There's just this big kind of foggy area around personal finances. Maybe we need to teach on principles of giving. We need to share some testimonials of people who are generous givers. Maybe we need to just tell them what an offering envelope is, right? And some of you are going, what's an offering envelope? All right. Church budget. Most churches I work with, most of them, approve their church budget on a Thursday night in the men's restroom on the 15th floor of the education building. They don't want anybody there to ask questions. You know what I'm talking about? And if you have vision, your church budget is actually the story of what you're investing in. It's your resourcing pathway. So we could teach about church budget and tell our vision in that. What about biblical truths? There are some great people, great stories in the Bible that we can attach a hero to. How about this? Simply greeted well. Listen, if Joe comes to your church and he's not greeted well, he's not coming back for you to be disciple, right? So you're not going to have that opportunity. How about the gospel presented? Because if Joe doesn't know Jesus, right? He can't grow in Jesus. How about celebrations? How are we doing on celebrations? Remember that face? We need to celebrate. Hey, listen, and we're going to talk about rhythms in a second. There are things you do all the time that we just have to think through a new competency and go, hey, listen, we had the opportunity to do VBS. Let's just play with. And you know why? Because of your generosity allowed us to do that. We saw 800 kids come to VBS because of your generosity. We want to say thank you for that. This week we had that, and you just name it. And tie it back to generosity. Impact. Generous people want to have a return on investment. And you need to be able to tell your story of impact. Online giving is a big deal, which we'll talk about. And then text to give. Earlier today, I had a couple of guys go, I don't even know what that is. I don't even know what text to give is. If you're a millennial, that's your preferred way of giving. It's text to give. Why? Because when I'm stirred, I want to give. And the tool of text to give lets me do that. That's why after Harvey, for instance, Red Cross is coming in. What could you do on? You could text to give. Because you're being stirred. Boom. Text to give. So this is just a clear little thing. Now I want you to capture this for a second. Greeted well. Who does that? Is that the senior pastor? That's your hospitality ministry. Potentially, pastor could do gospel presented, but it'd be great if it was more relational, right? A next door neighbor, whoever invited him. What I want you to see in that is it's everybody's responsibility, not just the senior pastors. It's the whole staff, the whole church plays a part in creating a culture of generosity. So three key components of this. Number one, we build the pathway. Number two, we budget the principles. Number three, we leverage the rhythms. Those are your three deliverables. Here we go. This is a pathway. These are three examples from three different churches of the pathway so that you as a, let's play like you're the congregation, so that you as a congregation can self-assess where you are in your giving journey. These are three examples. This is how it really looks. I'm going to use these because I'm going to give you a tool that you can buy, a curriculum that you can buy that uses these five words, these five titles. A beginning, consistent, tithing, expanding, extravagant giver. Play with me here. A beginning giver, you would diagnose personally, I'm giving between 1% and 4% of my gross income. Backside, we would need to have an administrative process and we would set these trigger thresholds that when people jump to the next one, it would trigger our system so we would know how to respond. Does that make sense? So the way I would do this is we would install this in a teaching series with other curriculum in your small group systems, but we would ask you, I want you to assess your gross income, get that in your mind, and then determine what percentage do you give to the church? Do you fall between 1% and 4%? We would consider you a beginning giver. Consistent giver might give between 5% and 9%. A tithing giver might give 10%. Expanding might give between 11 and 20%. And extravagant would give 21% and above. By the way, these percentages are pretty consistent across the board. These dollar amounts are totally contextual, right? So the dollar amounts, which would be internal administrative triggers, we would adjust for your context. But the percentages are easy to assess. So look at that. Your congregation could quickly assess where they are in the journey. What we're calling them to do is take a next step. If I'm a beginning giver, I don't need you to jump over to be an expanding giver. I just want you to take a step to consistent. If I'm a consistent giver, how about we just offer you an opportunity to do a 90-day challenge? Right? Test God for the tithe for 90 days. Just see what happens. I've had churches say, we're gonna earmark that dollar amount. And if God doesn't prove himself faithful, we'll give it back to you. Just give it back to you. Right? Because it's not what I need from you. It's what I want for you. These two groups are making your vision flow right now. Right? They're giving. Those two groups we put together in what we call a legacy team or some kind of a group. And we want to meet with them two times a year as a collective group. In that, the agenda needs to be celebration. Hey, thank you for your generosity toward our church. Next is vision. Hey, I want to let you know what's next on the horizon. These are big investors in kingdom work. They need to know what's coming next. They want to know what's coming next. They want to invest in that. Third is an opportunity to give. Hey, listen, we need to change the carpet in the kids' building. It's about $8,000. You don't have to do anything. You're just the most generous people in our church. If we could pay that $8,000, it didn't have to hit our budget. Fair? You know what's going to happen? They're generous. Listen, they don't approach this as like, oh, you're taking something from me. They're like, give me the opportunity. $8,000, I'll write a check for that, pastor. You don't worry about that hitting the budget. Use that for ministry. Fair? Meet with those two times a year. And we run that and then we pray together. Pray about that next initiative. Pray together over their families. And then create a mechanism where, especially senior pastors, you want to be integrated with these folks, discipling them over coffee. Put it on your calendar twice a year, three times a year. Have a meal with those folks. How's your family? You're not asking them for anything. You're just loving on them. How's life? They have families too. They need to be discipled. Build the pathway. Next. Oh, here's your tool. Todd McMichin and I wrote some curriculum several years ago. It's on the Lifeway website. It's in the bookstore there. It's called A Generous Life. It's got sermon. It's a sermon series. It's all of your other collateral, family devotions, children's ministry curriculum, yada, yada, yada. It's called A Generous Life. You can see it's got your five stops on your pathway. It's got a beginning giver. It's got a biblical model, Zacchaeus. It was a beginning giver. He was a big giver, but he was a beginning giver. A consistent giver has a positive confession. I'm giving at least once a month. And the biblical model is Cornelius. Tithing giver, I'm giving my first fruits of 10% of my income to the Lord. Biblical model is Abraham. So you see what we did there. We basically have written it for you and said, here, you want to do an install, build your pathway. Here's your curriculum. It's got adult leader guides, student leader guides, family devotions, preschool leader guides. Everything's there. It's cheap. It's a great install. You'll see a bump. If you build culture, it becomes evergreen. So that's a tool. I want to give that to you, Generous Life. Next thing we do is we budget the principles. Now here's some budgeting benchmarks, some principled benchmarks of generous churches. We budget on 90% of the previous year's receipts. 90% of the previous year's receipts. So that means that we're increasing generosity, right? We're helping people take their next steps. And we're reducing our expenses on the backside. And in that gap is margin. Now, if it takes you 5 years to get there, then build a strategy to get you there 5 years. Most churches will set a 5-year plan and get there in 2 to 3. Because they'll see such a significant increase in generosity that receipts, it's easier, just easier to get there. But go away from the old budgeting technique of let's just raise it 10%. Let's just raise it 10%. Let's just raise it 10%. Create some margin. Next, your personnel line item needs to hit maximum 50% of your budget. Maximum. Use that as a threshold. I've got a church right now at 35%. That means that you're going to need to be discipling more leaders. You're going to have a leadership pipeline. Now, what happens when people really start serving and buying into your church? They become more generous. So you get workers and you get generosity. Facility cost, that's debt, that's electricity, that's everything. We want to benchmark no more than 25%. It may take you a while to get there, but let's try to benchmark it. This is a key thing. You want to get to the place where 50% of all of your giving is online, digital, you know, it's an ACH draw. Why would that be important? Why would it be important to have that automated?
It's continual.
It's continual. Yep.
You're reaching the younger people.
You've given an outlet. You're creating a tool for younger folks to give. Yep. Your older population, my mom and dad, my dad's passed, but when my mom and dad were older, they traveled a lot. And over the summer, they were just gone. If 90% of your giving comes in an offering plate and my mom and dad are gone for 3 months, you're not seeing that check for 3 months. So when you get it automated, you eliminate the summer slump. Would that be nice? Okay, so get it automated. The idea is you start to create margin and you get down to low or zero debt. Now remember, I'm not talking about it philosophy. If you want to put it in philosophy, you can do that. I'm talking about it agility. God tends to whisper at the worst time of the budget year, right? We have this opportunity and we're like strapped. We're creating margins so when God whispers, we can roll. We can roll. So these are benchmarks. If you don't have a tool, I want to point you to Generosity by Lifeway. I don't get any commission for this. Todd McMichen, he and I wrote the curriculum that I shared with you earlier. But Todd is the head now. He was on our team. He's the head of Generosity by Lifeway. There's Pushpay, there's Kindred, there's a lot of tools. That is a phenomenal tool. What comes along with it is a lot of video coaching from thought leaders. It's the only tool in the space that not only is very cost effective, but you get a full complement of teaching on how to cultivate generosity. So I would check that out. It's a great tool. Budget the principles. Next, we're going to leverage the rhythm. We're going to leverage the rhythm. So there are four things that every church does. You're going to do it anyway. Let's just put some principles in of generosity. Every week you inspire in worship. Every week. Every week you teach in discipleship. Every week you have some kind of discipleship mechanism going on. About once a month, you advance in leader development. That can be committees, that can be your deacons, that can be your elders, that can be anything that has to do with key leaders, about once a month you're meeting with those folks. And every week you manage an administration. So case in point, build out a calendar, put those four things as headers over 12 months, and start building the competencies around celebration, education. For instance, how can we start telling our story and showing the face? How can we start doing that in our worship services every week or at least twice a month? Build a calendar to do that. My church has a literal calendar with names and topics and where in the service it's going to fall. Every week, 52 weeks a year, we can go right now and look and go, hey, you know what? On whatever date, this person's going to stand up during worship, or this person's going to come up right before the offering, or this person's going to do it by video. Build competency. Teach in discipleship. At least once a year, you want to revisit your pathway. You want to do that in worship, and you want to do that in your discipleship mechanism. And you want to bring celebration and key pieces to that discipleship. Advance, key piece, at least 20% of staff meetings, committee meetings, deacon meetings, you want around vision. What happens in churches is we do this, and we work on tactical, and we forget that there's actually a longer play we're trying to accomplish. And so that's why when it comes budget time, there's such a fight. Because the lay people on the budget team, we've not done due diligence to cast the big vision. All they're looking at dollars and cents. And so let's build a calendar that helps them see bigger than that. Manage administration. Manage administration. What happens when somebody gives a first gift to your church? Is there a system for that? They should get a handwritten card from someone. You know, hey, God is moving great at such and such a church. Saw your contribution. Just want to say thank you for contributing to his vision here. Just a card. Boom. Right? What happens if somebody drops $100,000 at your church? You show up at the house is what you do. You show up at the house. What I want you to see, though, is this is where generosity becomes culture. This is where monitoring and mastering the competency of working a 12-month calendar versus these little spurts, this is culture. Learning to celebrate consistently is culture. Learning to cast vision or vision drip throughout the year is culture. And we want to help you. We've been hearing that all day about culture, haven't we? We want to help you manage and leverage the rhythms. Ultimately, and we're going to be done, and you can ask questions, but this is where we want to posture our folks. At the end of the day, we want to create a culture that has them praying this: I thank God who has blessed me in all ways, at all times, with more than I need. Listen, we're Americans. We got more than we need, right?
Amen.
Lead me to live generously, share joyfully, and look expectantly toward my future. If our churches, if we could build the backbone system and lead a culture of development and discipleship to lead to that point where people are postured in that prayer, you're now leading a completely different church. And it's bigger than the money. Fair? So I'm going to pause there. That's kind of the big kind of backbone flyby. What questions do you have?
What's the best tool to use for online giving?
Online giving. If you don't have one, you got to check out the generosity tool from LifeWay. And then, like I said, there's others out there. I think there's E360, Kindred, PushPay. PushPay is a Cadillac with a Cadillac price.
Yes, it is.
The tool, by the way, that's a strategic partner of Oxano, so we go to their thought leader events. You guys use PushPay?
No, we've looked at it. We're actually using ACS right now.
Okay.
We're about to jump out of a window. So.
Okay, great.
We're there.
Great. The thing about what we've done is Todd has built a Cadillac in the tool, but it's at a Corolla price, and then it's got all the teaching that goes with it. I mean, to me, it's like one of those. If you don't have a tool.
Does it integrate with the CHMS?
With everything.
Oh, nice.
It integrates with everything. Yep. Even if it's an old tool, it'll integrate with it. So check that out first. Other questions, comments? You believe this can be done?
How have you seen churches that have gone from having a lot of debt to being debt-free celebrate that?
It's not hard to celebrate that.
No, but
it's harder to get there.
Okay.
So like you have to set a vision for your church in a time span, and just go, look, we're going to cinch the belt for X number of months, 24 months, 36 months, and we're going to get out of debt. You don't get out of debt just by raising the money to get out of debt. You do it by really restricting the expenses. And you're just saying, hey, for the next 36 months, this is about creating agility for the future. Once we get there, then it opens up a new window for us, a new season for us.
And that's real important that they know that that's not the goal in itself, to become
debt free. That's right.
That's not the
win
to
others.
That's
the
right.
Kingdom of God.
That's right.
That's not the whole thing.
And you're going to have to combat that piece. Like, listen, I am for being out of debt. But we've reframed the money conversation through a different lens, so you're going to have to constantly add that disclaimer to your vision casting. Because what people are going to hear is, we're going to be out of debt, forever out of debt.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
don't stop giving.
Well, and it's one of those, we may not, right? We may not.
That's true.
And what we don't need is a sideways energy fight when it comes time to take that next big step that may require some debt, but we've shown fiscal responsibility to kind of accordion it. We may extend and then pay down and extend and pay down, but you end up with a whole different thing if people hear our philosophy is to be out of debt. So it's noble, just be careful it doesn't solidify on you.
So what's the big thing now for this age? So you had the PTO and Dave Ramsey, so what's the big thing now?
The big thing now is just it's that face. It really is that face and the simplicity of the story. That's why Christmas time, by the way, end of year giving is a big deal. Big deal. Endowments is a big deal. So end of year giving is one of those, you know, that's why you see is it Sarah McLaughlin on the piano and the dog, she's playing the sad music and the dogs are all there and they're just making a killing. And churches are like, oh, you know, we're trying to finish our budget well. So end of year giving, people are going to give end of the year. Name it so that every year it has, you know, the big give. Every year it's the red envelope. Every year it's something. And so that your church knows from, you know, middle of November to end of the year, Giving Tuesday is a big deal. Harness it. If you have a tool, Giving Tuesday comes after Cyber Monday. It's in the sequence of culture now. Harness it. You can give to your church on Giving Tuesday.
One of the biggest challenges that we face is we have a lot of different ministries and they're asking for a lot of different things. And there's a lot of different events from OCC to conferences that we're doing. And so it almost seems like there's a constant ask.
That's right. Great. Okay. So the statement is, listen, you want to get your designated funds down to nothing. The church is the cause, right? I've seen churches literally about to go under and have millions in designated funds. They can't touch it. It's designated, right? You got to do due diligence now. The church is the cause. And that's why the celebration is so important, because when you give to our church, case in point, Annie Armstrong. Any of you do Annie Armstrong? Okay. So a lot of churches that I work with take Annie Armstrong. They assign a dollar amount in their budget and they don't have a standalone emphasis. They do end-of-year giving, and they keep telling the church, hey, we're giving $45,000 to Annie Armstrong, $15,000, whatever it is. But the church is the cause, because what will happen is, I like Annie Armstrong, so I'm going to give to Annie Armstrong. It's noble. It just bypasses the vision of the church. And we're going to do it anyway, so just name it and give to it. Right? Lottie Moon. Missions Month. You know, try to start reducing the emphases so that you can start increasing the discipleship. And then you've got to tell the story. When you give here, it goes to this, it goes to this, it goes to this. So that if we are the conduit collectively, when you give here, it accomplishes these things.